Welcome to the Tearing It Up podcast. I'm your host, Taryn. We'll be tearing it up, tearing it down, and tearing it apart, dissecting all things related to those who deviate from the standard. From leaders of their industry to leaders of mediocrity, and maybe a gear review or two thrown in. We shoot the shit and let the conversations flow, so if that's not your style, this may not be for you. Otherwise, listen in. Hope to light a fire in you somehow.
Hello, everybody. We are here with another amazing guest. We have Cassie Abel of Wild Rye. And I feel like I might sound like a broken record as I've been saying this so much lately because we've had many amazing guests that, like, it is, again, another moment in time in the podcast that when I started the podcast, I have had a list of a few people of who I would love to have on someday. And you were definitely on that someday list. So for it to be that day that it's here and I get to chat with you on the podcast is just amazing for me. So I'm so happy to have you here. I can't wait to get into it. But so I found Wild Rye way back in the beginning. I think it was 2016, was it, when it first started? Okay. So, and at that time, it was called Buttermilk Apparel, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Sure it was.
Yeah. So I can't remember exactly like how I found out about it, but I know your then co-founder, Katie Hoover Smoot, she is a Tahoe local, and I knew her from, she had an office above the cafe that I worked at in near Alpine Meadows. So she would come in all the time. And, but yeah, I still feel like I found out about it, like not directly through her, but online, and mm-hmm. then knew Katie. And I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And I was just getting into mountain biking. So it was all perfect timing for me to like just fall madly in love with this brand who was making apparel just for women mountain bikers and someone I knew. I actually even applied for a job when the shipping was going out from Olympic Valley.
I think
it must have been when Katie was, I don't know if she was, but my assumption was that like she was doing it from her house or office or something.
Her parents' garage.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. And so, yeah, I had applied to do that, but, you know, I've always had a ton of other jobs and things. So Katie was like, you know, I would hate for you to drive all the way from Truckee to like do a couple of things and all this and that. So I didn't end up doing it, but I've always been on the lookout. Anytime a Wild Rye job posting up, I'm like, oh, what is it?
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I've followed the brand since then, you know, through its change with the name and all that. And then now I know you are the full owner of it. And Katie has moved on from Wild Rye, but she's still around in Tahoe.
She's still in Tahoe. She wrote a New York Times bestselling novel, which is so cool. The Cloisters. I loved it. I read it on the beach in Mexico and it was like the best. And
that's so awesome. Yeah. I need to pick it up. I keep seeing it from her post and then in our local bookstores too. So that's on my list for the next time I go in there to pick it up for sure. Cause it's just so cool to be able to have anything in your hands of someone you know who's made it, like especially a book that you've written. But mm-hmm. that's what was so cool. That's why I loved Wild Rye. I'm like, oh, someone I know has like invested in this. Yeah, totally. So Cassie, where are you at right now in the world? Where are we talking to you from?
Yeah, I'm in the Wild Rye headquarters in downtown Ketchum, Idaho, which is adjacent to Sun Valley, Idaho, about a half a mile from Sun Valley Ski Resort. And it's snowing. It's like winter has finally showed up for at least a split second here in Idaho. It's been a bleak winter thus far, but
yeah, same here. I think everywhere on the West, you know, it hasn't been what we expected, especially from last winter. I know that for here in Tahoe, it was crazy, but a lot of folks too had a really great winter.
Yeah.
It's snowing here too. It just started. It's really minimal right now, but we're in the middle of like a blizzard warning and we're supposed to get anywhere from like 4 to like 8 or 12 feet or something crazy over few days. Like it's just supposed to hammer. So everybody's like up in arms about it, super excited and ready for it. But then you're also like, well, is this going to be way on the low end of the spectrum? Is this really going to hit how they say? So we'll see what happens. It'll be an interesting few days for sure.
Awesome.
Yeah. So With Katie, I'm interested about kind of the start of Wild Rye and where the idea came from in the first place, how you guys got connected, and you know, we'll move through where you are today. But I guess before we even get there, a little bit about just yourself. Like, you're in Ketchum now. How long have you been there? Are you from there?
Yeah, so I've been in and out of Ketchum most of my life. So since I was an 8-year-old kid, we lived here when I was in third grade. My mom took a teaching job at one of the local schools covering for a teacher who was on maternity leave. So she up and moved our family just for 1 year. And after that 1 year as an 8-year-old here, I've been really tied to this place. My best friend in the whole wide world is my best friend from third grade. Here in Ketchum. And, but I actually am originally from Vashon Island outside of Seattle. And it sounds like you guys are from Tacoma, which is south of Vashon Island. And, so grew up on Vashon. I actually commuted to school in Seattle, seventh grade on. So I rode a ferry boat every day to go to school. Then went to college in Colorado, played lacrosse through college, and, yeah, I don't know what else.
That's awesome. Yeah, so we do have a lot of Washington-based listeners for sure. So they will be familiar with Vashon Island. And Amber might actually pop on here too, just to, if you guys happen to hear her. But anyways, so Vashon Island for me, I have very strong memories of it because we did a lot of wrestling tournaments over there. So we'd commute over. And that is one thing I miss so much about Washington. I didn't do it super often or anything, like hop around, but just ferry travel. I love being able to like go like wherever, all these little islands, and hop back over, and just, I'm obsessed with boats and things. So I love being able to ride the ferry. And if I was a kid, I mean, I'm sure as a kid, it also has its cons, but I would have absolutely loved having to get the ferry every day to go to school.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Well, when you're commuting 4 hours a day for 6 years straight, you get a little sick of it, especially when you miss a ferry or it overflows. So you like can't get on, but, overall ferry travel is pretty darn cool. It definitely taught me to be very punctual. I have extreme anxiety when I'm late for things, because you miss a ferry, you miss school, essentially.
Yeah. Okay. So there it is, right there, the con of a 4-hour commute. I mean, that is one of the reasons too, that I think about, I love being where I'm at. Obviously we get stuck in traffic here too, because we just have 2-lane highways and stuff. But, thinking about folks who do travel like a, you know, 2-hour commute from, especially in the Seattle area, like Tacoma to Seattle, that commute daily is, awful. Yeah. Awful. So I can't imagine, I guess, having that amount of time commuting to school, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But so that's so cool though that you had that connection with Ketchum at such a young age too. And then just kind of, it was like two homes from a very young age, it sounds. And then to have all your best friends, because again, that's the thing that I miss most too, is I still have all my great friends from being young in Washington, but you know, I don't have them here. So sometimes it's a little like, oh, so that's really cool that you were able to have the connections in both places. And now you've made Ketchum your home.
Yeah. It's a special place for sure.
Yeah. So as a kid, what kind of, you're biking and playing lacrosse, and did you go to college and play lacrosse?
I did. Yeah. I played lacrosse at Colorado College and then went on to coach at Berkeley. But I played every team sport imaginable growing up. I played soccer, basketball, lacrosse through high school. You know, my mom is still a super passionate skier. But she used to take me out of school as an elementary school kid on physical education days to go skiing. My dad was an avid cyclist, so he forced bike riding everywhere. I kind of hated it as a kid, because if I wanted to like go get an ice cream cone, we had to ride our bikes there. If I wanted to go to the swimming pool, we had to ride our bikes there. But it definitely grew on me as I got older, and ultimately didn't passionately participate in skiing or cycling through high school and even through college, because I was such a team sport girl. But after college, I rediscovered my love for skiing and the mountains. And yeah,
I love that, because I definitely, that's where my background is as well, as team sports. And Amber also was played soccer and fast pitch. We played together in high school. And so really moving to Tahoe and just into my 20s was when I found more of those kind of outdoor and like action sports and individual sports. But I do feel like having that team sport experience as a young person and just kind of being my building base was a great experience. And I love it. And I really think that as kids, you should do it all and whatever, obviously, that you have the most interest in, go towards. But I think it just gives you a whole different view of how to work with other people. And just, I don't know, I can appreciate now actually being kind of on my own in these individual sports because I'm just like, oh, it's all on me now. But yeah. So what, you weren't super into skiing and biking in those high school years. Where did that like switch kind of happen that all of a sudden, like you found your love for those activities that eventually led to Wild Ride?
Totally. I mean, it's hard to find 24 women to go play lacrosse with. So I continued to play adult intramurals in Denver. When I moved to Denver, I worked in finance, and then I moved to San Francisco area where I coached lacrosse at Berkeley. But then soon after, started working for a marketing agency. And during that time, I discovered Tahoe and a group of friends that I bought into a ski lease with. And we'd go up to Tahoe every weekend. And I found myself being that psycho that just went every single weekend. The people in my house, you know, were sort of hit or miss. And I was like, no, I'm going. I rediscovered myself in the mountains. I felt like more at peace with myself. And ultimately that led me to look for opportunities to move back to the mountains after about 4 years in San Francisco. But yeah, during that time, I bought a road bike and also spent time going to Tahoe, and then moved back to the mountains. I was a marketing manager at Grand Targhee, and immediately upon landing there, I bought myself a mountain bike and was like, okay, I'm going to learn this sport. I'm in the mountains. Like, it's easy. It's accessible now. And yeah, I remember going on my first ride by myself because I'd moved to Driggs, Idaho, and didn't really know anyone, and was told I needed to bring bear spray. So that was a little scary. Cause it's grizzly country, and I ate shit so hard in a creek bed, like gushing blood. It was like, you know, a point to point ride. And I was like right in the middle of it. And so, yeah, I had a college friend give me stitches in her bathtub.
Oh my God.
My knee once I got out of there. But I remember sitting there being like, oh gosh, I'm gushing blood and it's grizzly bear country. Like the panic going through my head. Are they attracted to blood? Are they gonna pull me? But, you know, all the irrational things you start to think about when you're alone in the outdoors. But, but yeah, after that, I just never looked back. It was a new challenge. I like to find new challenges, and is something to humble me, if you will.
Yeah. That's awesome and scary for sure. I would, all those thoughts would be going through my mind in grizzly country, like immediately, like shark in water, right? Like, how far do they smell it from? Like, what do they, God, oh, that's insane. So as you're finding your love again for the mountains, you're into mountain biking and into skiing and kind of made this transition there. What were you doing like for work?
I was a marketing manager at Targhee for a year, and then was offered what I, until Wild Rye, would considered my absolute end all be all dream job at Smith Optics. I was their global communications person. It enabled me to move back to Ketchum, which is where, you know, I have family and a lot of community. And so I worked for Smith as a global communications person for 3 or 4 years before they announced they were relocating the brand to Portland. And at that point I had to decide between dream lifestyle and dream town, or sorry, dream lifestyle and dream job. And ultimately the mountain lifestyle won out and I had to figure out what to do next.
Hey, I love that. We're definitely all about the dream lifestyle and trying to figure out how to get it, how to make it work. And sometimes that can be very hard especially when the options are dream job. I mean, it's hard enough when it's like not dream job, but job. It's like, yeah. you need the money. And also, I'm just going to tell everyone here, Amber was able to join us. She's just popped on.
Hi!
So. Amber, this is Cassie. Cassie, this is Amber.
Hi, Cassie.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Where are you physically right now?
Ketchum. I'm in Sun Valley, Idaho. Yeah.
Awesome. Sweet.
Yeah.
You guys getting snow? It looks kind of snowy.
Yep. Finally, winter has returned a little bit. We'll
see
if it materializes into the storm of the century that everyone's predicting.
Yeah. We've been needing it all Pacific Northwest and seriously. California.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So we've chose dream lifestyle over dream job. And so where does that leave you then for work? What are you doing to now pay the bills for this dream lifestyle?
I launched a communications and marketing consulting business called White Cloud Communications, and almost immediately was reconnected with Katie. I had been on the final press trip during my time at Smith and had just an incredible group of journalists and friends. And one of those journalists was Mike Rogge, another Tahoe local who owns the Mountain Gazette. And I just remember sitting down and talking to him over too many beers one night or margaritas or something, and just, you know, sort of expressing my gripes about the lack of representation of women in the outdoor space, the lack of options for us, and how I really wanted under White Cloud to work with women-led brands because there were so few of us in the outdoors at that point in time. And he was like, you got to meet my friend Katie. She's like, you know, speaking your language. She's thinking about this thing. And you guys are clearly seeing similar gaps in the marketplace. So he connected us with Katie, and it turned out Katie and I actually had known each other from my Bay Area Tahoe days, and we'd gone to some of the same weddings, and we just totally like sort of were in lockstep. And she was further along in her thinking of Wild Rye. Then Buttermilk Mountain Apparel had a more developed business plan, or had a developed business plan. And I basically pitched her on letting me be her co-founder. And I wanted to do this with her because just it was just everything that I felt the outdoor industry needed. And so I remember sitting at the Nordstrom's cafe outside of Outdoor Retailer, finding like a quiet moment and sort of discussing how this could work. And she was in Tahoe and I was in Idaho, and we finally just said, fuck it, let's do it. And that was August 2015. And about a year later, we actually launched to the market.
Wow. So,
yeah.
Bravo.
That is so cool.
Turnaround, I feel like.
Yeah, August 15th to 16th.
The 2015 to 2016. Yeah. So Katie had definitely been working on it a little bit longer. You know, she definitely had laid the groundwork, was already in motion a bit on it. And it was something that she'd been percolating on much longer and had sort of kicked off development and sort of sourcing of fabrics. Where she was convinced to bring me on as a co-founder. And we actually had planned to launch in spring of 16, and, you know, being the small brand and epic amounts of delays and getting bumped down the factory production line because our order was so small. Mm-hmm. We also had countless errors with our bulk production run. In that first season, we had silicone leg bands of our chamois shorts sewn on inside out.
Oh, so no!
Unsewed and re-sewed by seamstresses in California. We had our mountain bike shorts came in out of spec by an inch flat. So when you're measuring products, you like lay, you know, the shorts down on a table and measure the waistband, and it was like an inch too big. So our medium shorts were actually fitting like a large, and our large shorts were fitting like an extra large. And so there was nothing we could do about that other than message how to order.
Yeah.
We had all sorts of issues launching, but we did it, and we got there, and all these things that could have sunk us just we took in stride as learning experiences, mm-hmm. and did our best to not get discouraged, even though it was easy to do.
Yeah. Yes. Well, that's super hard as a product-based business and a small business, right? It's not like you're a big business just launching a new line or something where it's these little snafus. You could just say, well, let's get rid of that and just order, you know, fix it and order new ones. Like, you have to figure out how to make it work. And for your first kind of product showing, it's like, this is our reputation that we're starting out with, is like, our sizing's all off or this or that. Mm-hmm. Or I actually had a conversation with Karina Hamill of Bevo. Mm-hmm. And so we talked a lot about the production side of things, and it's so interesting, things you don't really think about, because you don't think about the things you don't know, right? So when you're going to start a business, you, especially apparel or any kind of product, if you aren't in that industry beforehand, you can't even imagine all the things that could go wrong.
Yeah.
Like your chamois being sewn inside out.
Yeah, it was wild.
How could that happen?
It was a big financial blow for sure.
Yeah.
And a blow. So, yeah.
How many products did you launch that first line with?
We had a chamois short, a baggy short, and two merino tops. So it was a 4-piece collection. And then we had a 4-piece winter collection that followed on. But the other snafu, which you've alluded to, is that we launched under the name Buttermilk Mountain Apparel. And within a week of launch, we received a cease and desist order.
Oh, no.
A very friendly one, I might note.
That's good.
From some, you know, an organization that shall not be named. But we had about a week to change our name before we had to submit the trim information for our next line, because we couldn't launch with another line of products under the Buttermilk name. So yeah, that was just like, that month was wild between the production issues, the cease and desist, changing our names. Yeah.
Well, and changing your name, did that involve having to change your logo or graphic at all? Did you keep that all the same and just the name change was the only thing, or did you do a full kind of rebrand with it?
We did not do a full rebrand.
Okay.
We took the branding from Buttermilk and just updated the name in the fonts that accompanied the logo mark. So yeah, luckily there was no way we had time to redo all that. And we'd already invested so much money into a branding organization to develop the brand for us. So but man, Katie and I spent about a week straight on Google, just what can our name be, what URLs are available, mm-hmm. what does USPT, US patent and trade, I'm gonna mess this up, USPT, anyways, what not trademarked already.
I have an experience going through that actually with the store I worked for in Tahoe when we opened our second store. It was a little while later, like it wasn't a week, but yeah, we received like, nope, can't use this name. And it was like, so going through the name process, because we'd already took so long, like we went through quite the process trying to come up with this one. So we're like, oh man, back to the drawing board. But so I know that that's a pain in the butt for sure. And I can't, but again, with a brand new brand and trying to launch a new product line and keep everything in a timely manner so you can launch that next line, mm-hmm. for the upcoming season, that's got to be crazy stressful. Were there any moments during those times that you were like, what the fuck did I do? Like, why did, like,
no.
Did I do this? Like, or were you always able to kind of keep your head up and be like, okay, we can get through this?
I have to give Katie credit, because I think she definitely had a lot more of those moments, because she was in the operational hell of all of this more than I was. I was leading marketing and sort of external energy at that point in time. I was also physically not in California. So she took the brunt of the pain of this. And I think that ultimately is what led to her deciding that Wild Rye was maybe not what she wanted to do with her life.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, definitely. I mean, what the heck are we doing with it? Like, we know nothing.
Yeah.
We have this designer who's great that we found on Craigslist.
Oh, and no way.
She's still with the brand, by the way.
Oh, that's so cool.
She's been around as long as I have. So 8.5 years-ish.
Wow.
And so, yeah, we have this designer that we found on Craigslist. We had to change our name. We had production issues. Like, you know, what are we doing? We've never built apparel before. I was a marketer, communications brand person. Katie was, you know, very operationally minded, but hadn't been in the production world before. So I think she was pulling her hair out a lot. She was managing tech packs and factory relationships. And, you know, year one, we actually tried to manufacture in the US. We did manufacture in the US, and it was an epic nightmare. As just pointed out, they delivered 4 months late. They had all these errors. They didn't communicate. They didn't take accountability for anything. And so pretty much immediately we started looking for factory partners in Asia, and have had so much success where we are today with incredible factory partners across the ocean.
Yeah, that's awesome. Okay, so you did mention, like, you know, Katie got to a point of realizing, like, Wild Rye wasn't for her. So what did that look like, you kind of taking the reins of Wild Rye, and how did you feel, like, when she came to you, or however that conversation kind of happened about, like, doing it on your own? Or, I mean, I know you have a couple of people, obviously a designer and things like that, but how big was your team?
No,
and
yeah, I was really on my own.
Okay.
Kelsey at that point in time was like, I think she was getting paid $350 a month or some really small amount of money. And basically was just like gut checking some of the things we were doing. But yeah, no, Katie came to me, let's see, about 2.5 years in post launch, and was just like, I am burnt out. I want to ski again. I kind of think I just want, like, the consistency of being an art history professor. And, you know, I want my life back a little bit. And I don't, you know, she told me that she didn't feel like she was risk adverse enough, or she was too risk adverse to be an entrepreneur. And I was devastated. I was like, what the, like, I'm still running White Cloud Communication. I have a full client load and employees for White Cloud. And I'm like, oh, well, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, how do I do this on my own if we've already gone through all this?
Yeah. And she gave me, presented me with two options. One is to just sell off the remaining inventory and let the business fizzle out. And two was I could buy her out for X number of dollars, basically the cost of the inventory on hand. That was her ownership percentage. And I think I took not very long to think about it, but I was not in the weeds with the things that she was. I was out there in market and feeling so much energy and so much momentum that I don't think she had the luxury of experiencing. She was, you know, poring over financial statements and dealing with the operational side of the business, which was fairly bleak at that point in time.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we took about 3 weeks to transfer everything over and buy her out. And, yeah, then I was like, well, now how the fuck do I do all this stuff?
Yeah.
The F word.
No.
Part of my vocabulary.
The title of our recent episode is February Fuckery. So.
Okay, great.
You're good.
Yeah. So then I basically had to learn everything that Katie learned the hard way all over again.
Oh, God.
I didn't understand that we had to place a purchase order in order for our factory to actually start producing inventory, you know. So yeah, after I made that glaring error, I quickly asked Kelsey if she could give me more time and pay her more money, because she definitely knew that world of production way better than I did. And I was like, okay, I clearly need some help with this. So yeah, that's kind of how it went. And, you know, Katie told me years later that she felt okay with sort of letting go of this baby of hers, because in the back of her mind, she knew she always wanted to write a novel. So when she actually published The Cloisters, it was sort of like, okay, this is what I was meant to do. And
yeah,
this makes me so happy. And, I could not have been more excited for her, but yeah, I mean, it was a very amicable split, and I have so much respect for her dealing with everything she dealt with for two and a half years, and actually probably longer than that, because pre-launch. And
yeah,
I now know how hard it was.
Yeah. Well, that's so cool. I mean, it seems like it has come full circle for both of you to feel good about where where the brand is itself, because she also has reached some of her dreams and goals, right? So mm-hmm. I can imagine it might be hard to let go of something that you created, and you're proud of your friend. I'm sure she's so proud of you for what you've done with the brand. But yeah, sometimes I know that for me, I'd be like, oh man, should I have like stayed mm-hmm. or something? But her heart was somewhere else, and she did so much for the brand beforehand. And it's so cool to see where you have been able to take it in the last 8 years. And yeah. Further than that, because I know
5 years since I bought her.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so further than just the brand itself, I mean, you do so much else for the community with like Women Led Wednesday. And then I know you have some other foundations and things that you're involved with or have been recognized by. So without switching gears too much, I am super curious about how Women Led Wednesday came about, because I've been following that for a while too, and I'd love to dip into that a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we launched in 2018, so it was actually right before Katie came to me and was like, I'm done. But we were sitting down thinking about when to launch our holiday sales, and we were looking at the traditional shopping holiday schedule and just kind of felt icky about everything. Black Friday felt like pretty gross with mass consumption, and Cyber Monday felt like a really easy way for a small brand like ours to get lost in the battle of the ad dollars. Small Business Saturday felt very brick and mortar, and we didn't have a brick and mortar presence other than like a very few number of retailers that we were working with at the time. So yeah, I just threw it out there. It's like, there must be something for women-led brands. There's so much talk about how we get more women into leadership positions and into, you know, the C-suites and on Fortune 500 boards. I mean, it was a seriously hot topic that year. And I started poking around and nothing existed. And I continued to poke around, and I discovered that American Express had manufactured Small Business Saturday in the wake of the recession in like 2008, or, you know, in the aftermath of that recession. So yeah, I was like, oh, if American Express can do it, I can totally create something.
Yeah, why not?
Again, the underdog mentality. So yeah,
there's that non-adversement to risk. Like, give me all the risk.
Waking up one morning, I was like, okay, I'm just going to like build a Squarespace website. I'm going to email a bunch of people and try to get a few people on board. And keep in mind, this is like end of October, early November. So most big brands have their programs pretty darn baked. So
yeah, their holiday campaigns are done.
Yeah.
Like, so set.
Yeah. So I sat down one day and whipped out a website and shot an email out to anyone I could think of. And just the amount of excitement and energy that came from as a response to that email, it's like, okay, I think I'm onto something. You know, at that point in time, I had to manually add every brand that wanted to participate to the website. And yeah, so I spent a lot of late nights on the Women Led Wednesday website that year, but I think we ended up with 50 brands involved that first year.
Wow.
And mostly outdoor brands. And yeah, so the next year I hustled some partnership dollars in order to build out a more robust brand directory. And so worked with some former Smith colleagues to build that directory and launch a new website that enabled brands to apply, fill out their own information, and just for us to approve. But that's really how Women Led Wednesday launched. You know, just to give everyone a little bit more understanding of what it mm-hmm. is, it's an annual shopping holiday that occurs the day before US Thanksgiving that you know, all these brands collectively come together to encourage the public to shop women led in an effort to level the playing field and create a more gender balanced economic landscape. So yeah, so now we're 5 or 6 years in. I think this was our sixth annual event in 2023. Maybe it was our fifth, but I think it was our sixth. But yeah, now we have north of 800 brands in the directory.
Holy cow.
The initiative. And every year I tell myself I'm going to spend time in the off season to try to get financial support to keep it running. And every year I also swear off that I'm going to stop doing it because it's so much work. And so much of my team's work during that season. But then I get caught up in wild rye stuff. So yeah, maybe this is the incentive to get a partnership deck together.
Yeah, totally.
Itch some additional dollars to support, and hopefully hire, you know, my dream is to hire someone specifically to like run the initiative, because it can be so much more than it is.
Yeah. And it doesn't have to be just that one day, you know, right? It could go into so many other yeah. things. That's so cool though. I love Women Led Wednesday. I mean, I love the, like I said, the brand, your brand itself, and just connecting women with the outdoors. And so Women Led Wednesday, though, obviously with 800 people now, it's not outdoor specific. It's just, but it is all product based.
It's mostly, yeah, it's pretty much all product based. It's sort of a, you know, shoppable brands, if you will.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
We do have some experiences and events. But it really is designed for product-based companies. It's more successful for product-based mm-hmm. companies. Yeah. But we cover all categories of product-based companies at this point, and we're working on rebuilding our directory to make it more easily searchable and shoppable.
Awesome.
Well, hot tip, next year Galentine's Day is going to land on a Wednesday. So I don't know if you could do something on that day.
A double Women Led Wednesday.
Yeah,
totally.
That's a great idea. Okay. February 13th, bonus Women Led Wednesday.
Yes, yeah. Exactly.
That's awesome.
At least I'm pretty sure it always moves forward, because this year it was on a Tuesday.
Oh, but it's leap year. It's leap day today.
Oh yes, it's leap day.
But wait.
It messes me all. I don't even know.
Oh, yeah. Well, that changed things. Interesting. Well, still, it'll be a fun. Thursday. Could be a fun thing. To add in there.
Crazy. God, that's weird how it all works out.
I know, right? It's like weird that it even exists. But yeah. Okay, so Women Led Wednesday has only grown. Wild Rye has only grown. You're also a mom that we haven't talked about. So you got a lot of irons in the fire. A lot of us, you know, we talk about that often. A lot of our guests do, because they're a lot of small business owners. So you have to. But you mentioned, you know, Katie kind of wanting to step back because she was feeling burnt out. So you having all these different things going, how do you manage those? Do you feel like anything is offset with your seasons? I mean, is there ever really an off season for you with Wild Rye, or even like, it doesn't even sound like with Women Led Wednesday, because there's no potentially off season with Wild Rye. So
yeah, Wild Rye definitely does not have an off season. You know, we're in cycling, we're in snow sports, we're in outdoor lifestyle at this point in time. So we're very much so like firing year round. Mm-hmm. Women Led Wednesday definitely has an off season. Thank goodness. Otherwise it would cease to exist, because we could not keep that running that far. And then being a mom definitely doesn't have an off season.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, I mean, I suffer from burnout, like bouts of burnout, and you know, I'm fundraising right now, which is like the easiest way for a founder to burn out. It's, you know, disheartening and demoralizing, even though we are actually outperforming a lot. Whoa, sorry. I just dropped my crystal ball here that my team gave me. Predict the future.
Yes.
Yeah, right.
But it's burnout is real. I definitely felt it a lot last year. It was a really hard year. We definitely had some hiccups that we had to overcome, you know, some employee stuff, a challenging economy. And, you know, I'm very invested and very invested in my team. And it took a toll on me, for sure. It took a toll on my mental health, but I'm feeling, very energetic and ready for 2024. We're launching our spring line on Tuesday, March 25th. So we're really excited. It's our best collection yet. It's our biggest collection yet. We're expanding into some new categories. Prints are easily the best prints that we've introduced, in my opinion. So
I love that. And this will be in perfect time when you're all hearing this, like to It still won't be launched yet, but it'll be that nice little like peek-a-boo, like, oh, waiting for it.
Yeah, we're launching our Gasp very first all black short and all black pant. Big deal for us.
Big deal. Not even like a light gray outline pattern, just stark.
Wow. Nope. This time it's just black.
I know the people have been asking. So way to give it to them. And you know, it doesn't mean you're steering away from anything else. Yeah, totally. That's so cool. I did get an email the other day about like a little kind of sneak peek and it's coming thing. And I was just like, oh my gosh, so excited. And so as far as burnout, we did just have, it will be a couple weeks ago now. So that episode, February Fuckery, if the people listening want to know it, we talked a bit about burnout. We've talked about it before. We've had an expert kind of burnout coach on. It is a very real thing. And obviously for someone in your position who is like the one that everyone else turns to. So you can't really, it's hard to have a day off or anything. In all these, like you said, even being a mom of a young kid, you definitely don't have a day off. So what kind of things have you found that have like helped you manage those stages of burnout?
I think just giving myself a little bit of grace. So, you know, Friday afternoon, I'm feeling like just totally burnt out from the week. Like, fine, leave the office. We actually do this thing called Fresh Air Fridays, where the whole team can peace out at one on Fridays to go get outside and sort of fuel themselves after a long week. You know, the team works really hard. They put in the hours, and just having that flexibility to get outside on a Friday afternoon is, you know, and for those of us with kids, our kids are in childcare, so we get to do something for ourselves. But yeah, giving myself a little grace and getting exercise. I mean, really, I have a boot camp type of class called The Mill that I absolutely love. And it's on a very, you know, there's very sporadic classes. So I schedule my calendar around those classes just because they help me feel like centered and energetic and whatnot. So finding time to actually get exercise and take care of myself is something I've really prioritized in the last year and did not do a good job of before that. So
it's an ever-evolving learning curve. I feel like getting the self-care, the burnout balance, it's always just forever evolving.
Yeah, finding what's going to work for, like sometimes, you know, it's something else that gets you through it, and it's not always the same process. So
And I actually just hired an executive coach because I feel like my brain needs some wellness too. And that's been really, really awesome. It helped, you know, he helps me like through some challenging, you know, work issues, but he's also holding me accountable or helping me hold myself accountable for getting exercise and taking care of myself. It's a huge investment, but it's, you know, it's important.
Yeah.
You know, wellness is so much more than just your body. And
I think investing in a coach is one of the best things that you can do, in whether it's business, like life or fitness. Obviously, it is a huge investment. I think that it's one of the things that's really hard for people to invest in. You know, they're like, well, I'll get a gym membership or a yoga studio membership or whatever. But because they're high price tags for coaches, but when you start realizing just having that gym membership isn't working, or just like signing up for webinars and trying to like learn this or that isn't working. I mean, having someone who you can talk with and understands you can just be so, so helpful. And I hope that it overall in all different industries and ways that it can become more accessible for people, which is what I think is so cool about things like BetterHelp and online therapy that stemmed from the pandemic and whatnot. It just makes it more accessible to people that you don't have to go in, because that's a thing too, is like meeting with these people, trainers, or again, like therapists, life coach, whatever. So being able to find someone that you can meet with on a regular basis through whatever platform and in the way that you need them. But yeah, it's, it's hard to, in my, for me, I know personally, I've wanted a coach, and it's really hard to pull the trigger for that, because you're like, I can just figure it out myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's so much easier for someone who's not in your brain yeah. and in your like overwhelm and in your burnout to like help you navigate.
Absolutely.
All of it.
Yeah, yeah. For sure.
Yeah. Well,
So I know though you mentioned like you've got a lot of energy right now because you're coming into spring 24. And so it's going to be super exciting. That seems like that's pulled you out a bit. We're on the up, we're out of the valley, coming up mm-hmm. to the peak here. I can't wait to see this line. I know you started D2C, right? Directed to consumer. That's how most small businesses start. But now I know that you are in REI and other like specialty retail stores. Your relationship or partnership with REI, I've noticed and I've been curious, like they're designs that you don't see anywhere else. So do you have is that how all your products in REI are, just like a REI specific design?
Yeah. We launched with REI. It was one of our first retailers and it was online only. And it was a big deal. Katie and I got invited out to REI headquarters to pitch them. And we were all like ready with our pitch deck, trying to sell them on the brand. And we got interrupted mid pitch. And they're like, no. Like we already know about your brand. Like, let's just see product. And so we're like, okay, like that's cool. They know about us. And so, yeah, they started with us online. Our relationship with REI has grown every year. I think we went from online to 5 doors to then 30 doors. And then when they were interested in discussing launching in all 186 doors, we didn't have a price point that worked for them. So we worked with REI to introduce an exclusive collection that is only available at REI that is, you know, sort of simplified versions of some of our own products and still super high quality, but, you know, maybe no pockets or different pockets, or the construction's a little bit more economical. We have in spring 24, that exclusive, well, the exclusive collection has grown over the last 3 years as well. So for 2024, we'll now have 4 exclusive baggy shorts, 2 exclusive chamois shorts, like I think like 2 or 3 colors of a long sleeve shirt, socks, hats, graphic tees. But we also have our like hero pants, the Freya pants in every single door. So I think that answers your question, but yeah, it's a mix of exclusive product for REI for now. And you know, it's, I don't know that we'll forever do an exclusive product for REI, but they've become a really important partner of ours and, great to work with. They've really helped us grow our business, and I just appreciate the organization so much. And, you know, they're definitely not the only retailer that has helped and played a role in that. I have to give a serious shout out to like Title9 and Evo as well. They've been, of our bigger retailers, some of the most instrumental in being a part of our growth. So, yeah.
That's amazing. When did Title9 and Evo come about? Were those before like smaller, like outdoor specialty stores as well? Or were they kind of in the mix?
We launched a few outdoor specialty stores before REI.
Okay.
But we had to figure out how we were going to sell to wholesale because, like you mentioned, we launched the D2C business. Our timelines weren't appropriate for wholesale. Our costing didn't work for wholesale very well in the early days. So we've every year tried to figure out, you know, like improve and get more on the wholesale schedule and get our costing just a little bit better so that we can justify wholesale. So REI was first. And then I can't remember, I think Evo was next. I'm a Seattle girl. So I remember knocking on their door one day and being like, yo, is John Kennedy here? Like, I think he's the bike buyer. Can I talk to him? No, I think we'd set up a meeting, but, and then Title9, I was applied for their pitch best. And that's
what I thought.
Nine. Yeah. Back in fall of 2019, we were one of their PitchFest winners, and that led to a purchase order. And it was crazy timing because we launched in the pandemic with them. And, you know, leading into the pandemic, or in the early days of the pandemic, all of our retailers were panicking. Like REI wanted to cancel purchase orders. Evo suggested they might be canceling purchase orders. And here we'd gone and bought so much more inventory because we were, you know, finally in some of these bigger retailers and expecting potential reorders as the year went on. And so I was, you know, full panic. I myself had COVID. I had a 2-month-old child.
Like, oh my God.
Wow, I can't, so I could list all the things that went wrong in March of 2020, but it included my mom being in the hospital with COVID, my dad having a heart attack, our website getting hacked and getting, you know, basically swindled $5,000, which was a lot for us at the time, but it was just kind of like everything happened in that period. But wow. So this, long story long, I guess, we launched in Title IX and we got there. We got to launch. We went out in their catalog. They had our inventory. And 3 days after the catalog went out, I got an email from the founder of Title IX, Missy Park, who's an incredible mentor and inspiration to me. And all the title of the email said, "Holy shorts." And then the body of the email is like, "We've sold more of your shorts in 3 days than we've sold of any bike shorts in entire seasons."
Yes.
More.
Wow.
Success.
And so, yeah. Needless to say, that launch went well.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's obviously, that was a very scary time for everybody. Nobody knew what was going to happen, but what ended up happening specifically for biking was it blew up. Like, mm-hmm. You couldn't get bikes. I mean, even for what, 2 years after or something? I keep seeing articles now across LinkedIn about now, though, we're on the other end of like, there's a lot of inventory. It's died down. So what do we do? But yeah, I mean, that's got to be exciting for you at that time of like, okay, yeah, it didn't like just blow up in our faces. It worked out. So that's.
I remember getting off my bike at my first bike ride postpartum and looking at my phone and it had all these Shopify dings. And I was like, what happened? Did something break?
Yeah,
like, I didn't even send out an email today. Like, where'd all these orders come from?
Oh my gosh.
How did people find us?
That's so crazy.
Hey, things are shifting. This is great. Yeah.
Well, I love the overall look and feel of Wild Rye. I think Amber can also agree with this. We're not very much a like pink and flowery type of person, but I love that Wild Rye has designs. So you feel feminine, but they're not just like, yeah, pink flowers and purple, you know, like I can feel like I wear them and I'm like, yeah, this is better than all black, but I still will do an all black.
Yeah.
Like, don't get me wrong. I will be doing that all black, but I love having different kinds of designs. And now that you've expanded, like with the outdoor lifestyle, it just seems like Wild Rye is not slowing down at all. And it's so cool to see. I'm curious we've kind of touched on a lot of things, so you may not have a direct answer anyway, but right now, do you feel like there's kind of one thing that sticks out that's the most kind of the biggest challenge of having a product-based business?
I mean, today our biggest challenge is, like you said, the COVID hangover, the we have some aged inventory that we'd really like to see just disappear. Mm-hmm. Managing inventory is a really challenging part. And especially for a brand like us that offers 10 to 14 sizes in every short. I mean, we're launching a core collection of product through size 24 for women. We also have some girl sizing. So I think that actually, yeah. So really having to be thoughtful about what products we're offering and what sizes and what colors, and just trying to manage our SKU count and our inventory levels, is definitely the hardest thing to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah. I can imagine that is difficult for a lot. And I feel like women's brands specifically, because of the size ranges, and yeah, how do you know, especially different styles? Like you had core styles going up to this size. How do you decide? And then you have girls stuff like that. I can't imagine trying to, and that's all a guessing game, right? Of trying to figure out trends or like buying trends and this and that. And yeah, that's
an educated guessing game. Excuse me, an educated guessing game for the most part. But yeah. Yes, it is. It's, I mean, this is literally why my team gave me a crystal ball, because I'd sit in forecasting meetings and I'd be like, well, if I had a crystal ball, you would tell me that this is going to be a winner next year.
I love that. I love that. Well, before we sign, yes, totally. Before we sign off, I'm sure, again, as always, we could keep going on and talk to you about so many things. I would just love to hear more and pick your brain on a million things. But we've had you for almost an hour, so we don't want to keep you for your whole day. Is there anything you want to leave with the people? We know Spring 24 is coming out soon. Is there, like I said, anything specific, any other specific thing that they should be, anyone should be looking out for, or where to find you, all that kind of stuff?
So we definitely became known for our Bikes, Baddies, Brews, and No Bans benefit tee. That we launched in the aftermath of the Texas heartbeat law, and then soon after Idaho and overturning of Roe v. Wade. We have another benefit tee coming out this spring. It's an election year. It's an incredibly important year for women's healthcare and reproductive healthcare in general. So keep an eye out for that. That'll be coming in early April, and we're really fired up. One of our athletes designed the shirt design and it's super rad, but it also is going to go towards, you know,
yeah,
standing up for our community and our right to the healthcare that we need. So
I love that. As this morning, right before I got on, I was like, dang it. Like most of my Wild Ride stuff is shorts, so because I wanted to wear something.
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, I have the Bikes, Baddies, and Bands, like No Bands shirt. But I was like, oh my god, I have no idea where that is right now. It's buried in my fifth wheel cupboard. But that's so cool that there's a new one coming out for sure. I'm excited for that.
Something I'm super passionate about. So it's not a money maker for us, but it's definitely something that we feel very strongly that we need to do for our community and for the health and wellness of our whole country, to be honest.
Yeah, for real.
I'm sorry, did you say when exactly that was
launched? Early April.
Early April, okay. It will be in March when this episode is live, when everyone out there is hearing this, which is Women's History Month. So, I mean, we'll press that throughout the month too, of sharing the shirt, and the organization and all that information. I'm really excited to have some powerful women like yourself on for Women's History Month, and you're making moves, making waves. Love it. We love Wild Rye. Where do people find you? Website, Instagram, like all those platforms.
Wild-Rye.com. And then our Instagram handle is kind of funky. It's wild_rye_. If you want to find me personally, I'm just at Cassie Abel. And then we'll be at events all over the country this summer. So come find us at Sea Otter, at Hestival, which is a festival, music festival in Western Colorado. We'll be at
the Sturdy Dirty.
Sturdy Enduro. We'll be at Sturdy Dirty. We'll be at Northwest Tune-Up, I believe.
Okay.
We're still figuring out if we'll be at Crankworks. We'll be at Steamboat Gravel. We'll be at Rebecca's Private Idaho. We'll be at the Women of Oz Sunset Summit in Bentonville. We'll be at Rome Festival. We'll be
both of the Romes.
There's only one this year in Fruta.
Oh, right. I did hear that. Yeah. Okay.
And then we will have a presence at Grit Festival in Fayetteville, Arkansas, that's led by All Bikes Welcome. Look for a little benefit collab to benefit that nonprofit organization later this year. Gosh, I'm sure I'm missing things.
But that's a lot. There will be a lot of places. We're Amber and I are both racing the Sturdy Dirty. So
yay! Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Oh, yeah. I know. The other thing I'm really excited about is we will have a 3-month pop-up on Pearl Street in Boulder, Colorado. So I'm hoping to race the old ladies division at Sturdy Dirty, but we'll also be opening our pop-up shop the weekend before in Boulder. So yeah, we'll have 3 months running for that. So come find us in Boulder as well as at all these events.
Awesome. That's so cool. Well, we sure hope that we see you at the Sturdy Dirty, because we're going to be there with the podcast. We did a live podcast there last year, so we're hoping to do that again. And the race day is actually my birthday, so we want to have a great party on Saturday. So yeah, we'd love to see you, and we'll see some of the Wild Ride crew for sure. But
definitely some of the crew will be there at the very least.
So. Awesome. Yeah. Okay. Well, all of this will be in the show notes, and thank you so much, Cassie, for your time and sharing the story with everybody. And hopefully we get to have you on again sometime and talk about whatever new is coming out then and the growth of Wild Rye.
Great. Thank you guys so much. It's so awesome chatting. And I look forward to all the fun to come.
Awesome. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And we'll talk to you next week.
Bye.
Bye.
We hope you enjoyed this episode and would do us a huge favor, since we don't have any sponsors or anything like that, and would rate and review us on whatever platform it is you use, Spotify, Apple, Stitcher, whatever it is. And if you're listening and downloading just through the website, tearingituppodcast.com, leave comments. We'll definitely engage back with you. And on social media right now, we're just on Instagram, tearingituppodcast is the handle. Like the post, share the post, comment on the post, whatever it is you got, show us your love so we just stay relevant and show up in the rankings at all. So again, rate and review, please, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.